This is Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars with Stephen Fenwick and Trevor Long. Thanks to NRMA Insurance and Uniden.
That's right, Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars, proudly brought to you by NRMA Insurance, helping over 3 million people across Australia protect the things they care about, like my EVs. Stephen, you know, we've got to protect your car. That's what you want to protect. And Uniden smart dash cams. Always good to have a dash cam in your car, doesn't matter what sort of car you've got. But when I got my EV, I immediately put a dash cam in. Uniden's latest dash cams are phenomenal. We'll tell you about them shortly. Stephen, good to have you company.
Good to be here, mate. Yeah, a lot happening in this space this week.
A lot to get to this week. We'll talk to another owner this week. We've got another Model 3 owner. Just to be clear, there's always going to be a larger number of Tesla owners appear on the show because they are the majority of EV owners.
But they all have different experiences somehow. That's right. You know, they all approach it different ways.
So we'll talk to someone else this week. Plus, we're driving a couple of different cars this week we'll tell you about. And we've got a great question about Apple CarPlay and your experience with CarPlay having come from
a
vehicle
newbie.
Hasn't had it. But the big news last week was the federal government introducing draft legislation for the new vehicle emissions standard. Now, we've talked about this a few weeks ago when it was announced, and it was a hullabaloo, and there was an industry backlash, and there was some companies leaving lobby groups and all this kind of stuff happening. But yesterday it was a little bit more united, but not quite perfectly united. But one man that was certainly very happy about the changes, or at least the legislation, we'll talk about how he feels about the changes, is Behad Jafari, who is the CEO of the EV Council here in Australia. And Behad joins us on the line now. G'day, mate. How are you doing?
Hey, well, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, mate, this is a big win for the Electric Vehicle Council, but the electric vehicle industry. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, look, it definitely is. I mean, we started off at the beginning of last week with no standards in place and ended the week with standards tabled into Parliament and I think pretty, at the very least, moderately two strong ones in place. So, you know, a good 5 decades after they've been in place in places like the USA, we're going to start enjoying all of the same benefits of that sort of greater choice of electric vehicles, as well as things like fuel-efficient vehicles and hybrids. This helps more than just electric vehicles. It's just the electric vehicles part that I care about.
Yeah, you mentioned it being bringing us into line with other parts of the world. Has this achieved that now, do you think?
Yeah, look, I think these are pretty what I'd call globally consistent standards. So pretty early on, we and the rest of the car industry and the government sort of agreed that the USA standards are sort of somewhere in the ballpark of the USA standards, or at least they're pretty much right for us. So these are standards you may have heard this repeated quite a lot as the debate's been going on, but these are standards that exist right around the world. It's every developed country except for Australia and Russia have them in place. And every market has their own ones that are sort of suitable for them, right? And so Europe has much stronger ones than the US. We picked to align ourselves, again, we've developed our own ones, but sort of aligned a bit more with the US because they said, well, they're a big country, they drive big cars, they're, culturally there's a lot of similarities there, whereas in Europe the car market looks pretty different to ours. So just try to align ourselves that way.
The interesting thing about the reporting on this, and I will say most of it is the commentary in terms of reporting about this, there is still the talk of vehicle owners and vehicle buyers, but let's be real, the impact of these regulations are on people buying vehicles. It's on companies selling vehicles. It doesn't have any impact on people who today own a gas-guzzling V8 supercar. It makes no difference to them whatsoever, does it?
Yeah, I think it's really important to point out these standards are called new vehicle efficiency standards for a reason, because they only apply to new vehicles. So if you already own one or you own a classic or whatever, this doesn't apply to you at all. What it does mean is that we look at the car market and we see something like 80%, 75% of people only ever buy used vehicles. Mm. It means, of course, you guys would know, there's only one way you get a used vehicle, though. You've got to build a new one and get someone to buy that in the first place. Yep. So it means for most of the market, the used vehicle they eventually get their hands on will be either a more efficient one or will be an electric one. Or these standards aren't a ban of any kinds, or they'll get exactly what they got their hands on before. There'll just be a broader mix of used vehicles for them to choose from eventually.
So what is this going to do to the EV market, mate? Is this going to move the needle somewhat or not?
Look, a big reason why we've certainly been eager for these standards, and like I say, this is a standard that sort of was pushed to governments by car companies themselves and by the sort of car industry themselves. Importantly, there's a standard that everyone across the car industry agreed was necessary. There was some disagreement about what they should look like, but nobody was saying they shouldn't be in place at all. I mean, the big thing that we saw was in the last 3 years, we've seen every year electric vehicle sales have doubled. But other than those electric vehicle-only companies like Tesla and BYD, for instance, every other company will often say, you know, it's great that our sales have doubled, but our biggest problem is that we're turning customers away because we're selling out of electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. Demand for us is actually higher than supply. And when we talk to, you know, this isn't some secret scheme. When we talk to our parent company and say, hey, how can we get twice as many electric vehicles? They say, well, pass these standards because everybody else does. And so they get prioritized ahead of you. So this doesn't fix every single problem. It just somewhat levels the playing field to other countries of saying, let's actually make sure we can get a hold of the same vehicles that everybody else is, you know, is enjoying and has in their dealerships already.
So hopefully this makes Australia as much of a priority as other markets.
It certainly puts us on the list with other markets. Yeah. Now, the watering down is another way of describing what the minister announced last week. Is it a watering down or is it just there's a few more vehicles that get exemptions? I mean, from an emissions point of view, it's probably not ideal, but from a support for cleaner vehicles, it's still a big win.
That's absolutely right. Look, there are two ways to look at this. We started off with no standards at all, and now we have strong ones in place. That, to me, is an absolute win, and I'm celebrating that. There was also a draft standard introduced, and look, I've done this work in a whole range of industries and, you know, do a lot of work around policy development. For me, this is sort of business as usual, right? If the government introduces a draft one, consults on it, and then ends up with a final one that looks different. And if it doesn't look different, then you ask, well, have you really consulted at all? Or, you know, have you consulted in name only? So, you know, yes, the final one is weaker than the draft one. I would like a stronger one. Other people would like an even, you know, weaker one. I think that, yeah, that's totally normal. But to me, the fact that it's changed and it, you know, people have been heard and have gotten changes through it, that wasn't by any means shocking. To me, that is as somebody who does, you know, policy development stuff all of the time, I'm like, yeah, this is exactly how the system works.
Yep.
Sometimes there are policies that go in that I don't like and I want to be heard and get to change them a little bit as well. This is one that I do like. Other people got heard and they got to change it. At the end of the day, though, by no means, I mean, there's no car company that would stand up and say this is a weak standard or, you know, describe it as a watered-down standard. I think they'd say this is still a quite strong one. Other people would argue, you know, the draft one was too strong and this one's just strong enough.
Is it weak, though? Is it weak, though, of the Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries when it was brought forward to just simply say we will review this rather than coming out fully in support of it?
Look, I think different companies had a bit of a different approach, right? I think that, I remember the minister in the process of this sort of put it pretty plainly. I think probably the best way for me to put it is even ourselves as an organisation, we have car companies who sell only electric vehicles, car companies who sell, you know, patrols and big diesel vehicles. So we have a spectrum of views. There were people who were showing up to the government and saying, we get what you're trying to do. We support what you're trying to do. Here are our issues. Listen to us. And the government said, absolutely. Sit at the table. You know, we'll work through this any way that you guys want. And they did eventually end up getting changes made to it as well. There are other people that just came out with pretty outrageous claims and, you know, numbers that they eventually themselves walked away from about, you know, massive price rises and all these things. And the government said, this, if that's why you want to carry on, by all means, you go out and you do that outside the tent. You don't get to sit inside the tent to do it. Right. I think this is the difference that we're talking about. Like I say, there are sometimes things that governments do that I don't like, and I complain about those things. And, you know, governments can understand, okay, that's your perspective. Fair enough. There's a reasonable way to do those things. I think that was the sort of big difference that we saw in the debate.
Fair enough.
So you're in the best position possible to sort of judge or tell us how the EV industry is doing. How are we tracking in comparison to other developed markets in terms of the uptake of EVs, you think?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question. I mentioned earlier that for each of the past 3 years, we've been doubling sales, and that's been off of a pretty low mark in Australia. Mm. Where compared to sort of, you know, other countries like ours, you know, every country, you know, if we sort of hit an average of more developed countries, you know, prosperous countries that sort of look like us, say we're about at the halfway mark of where the rest of them are. So we've got, you know, we could double our sales and just sort of just be where everybody else is today. Now, the good news is, if you had me on the program 3 years ago, if this program existed 3 years ago and you had me on, I'd say we're about 10 times behind where everybody else is.
Okay.
And then, you know, 2 years ago, I would have said we're about five times behind where everybody else is. Now I'm saying we're two times behind where everybody is. So that tells you something.
Right? Moving in the right
direction. We are still behind, but we are very quickly catching up.
Okay.
And again, you know, those other markets, they're at something like this year looking like around 25-odd percent of the vehicles they sell being electric. So there's the other point I often bring up when quite a lot of people bring up edge cases and say, well, what about this person with very specific needs and they don't have an electric vehicle that suits them? I say, mate, forget about that edge case, because the markets we're trying to catch up to, a quarter of people are buying electric vehicles. So the majority of people actually aren't yet. So you don't need to worry about that very specific edge case. We're just saying, you know, let's have our conditions, whether it's the charging infrastructure on our ground, the choices available to people, be right enough so that we can at least be on par with where the rest of the world already is. I'm not saying we should, you know, try to invent an electric vehicle that doesn't exist just for us.
Yeah. Just quick follow-up, though. So your position as head of the EV Council, it's as much about, is it as much about the cars themselves as well as infrastructure, like getting the chargers out there and in that area as well?
Yeah, that's right. So a bit about us, we have a bit over 100 members now, and maybe about 12 of those members sell cars. So we sort of represent what we call the whole ecosystem. So banks are members of ours, because we look at how do we get better financial products, you know, and charging companies, energy companies. So it's really looking at that whole ecosystem, because it's really, that's what the automotive industry is these days, in a way, right? You sort of, you have to solve that whole problem for consumers. You can't just tell them, here's the car, good luck to you, because we know if we did that, they'd stick with petrol and diesel cars.
we've talked about it for sure.
Yeah.
Just finally, you and I have talked in the past and disagreed in the past about the incentives required that some people believe are required to get people buying EVs, like government incentives, rebates, things like that.
Sure.
Where are we at today? Because, I mean, here's a crazy thing to think, that in the last, you'll be impressed with me, Behad, in the last 8 months, I've bought two EVs, okay? I've come a long way.
Right. Doing very well.
One,
good, very impressed. Yeah.
One of them, I got a rebate from the government. Yay! The second one, there's no more rebate, because in New South Wales, the rebates ended in January.
Right. Yeah.
So we had this point where there was a push, and now there's no government support. So do you, and I, frankly, my position has not changed. I don't care. I don't believe government should fund the purchasing of vehicles. But where do you think that incentive-based push towards EVs sits? Do we need more incentives, or do we just need the industry to supply more vehicles, potentially at better prices? Where do you see it sit today?
So we do still have a big federal incentive on the table now. I think that's what's changed from previously. It's a tax exemption. It's not a sort of upfront cash rebate of if you buy one on a novated lease, or if you're a fleet, you cannot pay fringe benefits tax. And so it's a more complicated incentive. You have to understand how it works. But once you understand how it works, it's actually a very generous one. It sort of knocks off, you know, $5,000-$10,000 on how much you would be paying in tax otherwise. So that's quite good. I completely take your point. I think there are even a number of car companies who don't agree with the idea of incentives. What I say is, whether or not you like them, the truth is they work. They get more people buying electric vehicles. And if that's your aim, it's obviously my aim, because, you know, it's in the job title, but also, as you know, if your government's trying to decarbonize or even just electrify for other reasons, like stopping selling petrol, for instance, these things do work. They help ramp up. They help ramp up sales. They help you get to your targets faster. So, you know, we did see that. We had, I said, you know, very coincidentally for us, around that time where electric vehicle sales started doubling, we can't put it all down to the incentives, because more models became available. Car companies dropped the prices themselves as well. But also incentives started coming in, and we did see sales increasing as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really is about, like, it's not just about having the incentives there for the fun of them. It's about what you're trying to achieve with them. And again, that's why when we see them work all around the world, they're usually there for a period of time, right? To say, we want to help this market get up to 20-30%, and then we can roll them back, and, you know, they're off and running.
Behad, you've done an amazing effort to work with the government. Lobbying is one word that's used, but I see it more as a collaborative effort between yourself and the vehicle companies and a whole range of stakeholders to get the government to this place. I'm fully supportive of the legislation. I think it's a great way to move forward because it doesn't impact anyone other than the car companies themselves in the decisions they make to range their vehicles. And hopefully we don't see any of the negative impacts that some people have foreshadowed. I doubt it. And I think we're only going to see positive upside. So well done to you and everyone who's been working towards this. And I think also, Behad, I'd say on our behalf, we'd love to talk more regularly because Absolutely. We obviously are doing this every single week. And whenever there's issues, we want to be talking about them in a way that the average potential EV buyer and the average EV owner can understand and relate to. So we'd love to and look forward to talking to you more regularly, mate.
Really appreciate that, guys. And I mean, electric vehicle news certainly isn't going to slow down anytime soon. So I'd be very happy to come back and keep talking about all the great things happening in our space.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for your time. I appreciate
Thanks
a
lot.
It.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Behad Jafari, the CEO of the Electric Vehicle Council. Really, yeah. Look, and let's be clear, top bloke, really yep. passionate about what he does, and I have absolutely yep. been at loggerheads with him previously.
Yep.
I've interviewed
That's
him before.
That's not like you, Trev.
We've talked before about the rebates because he'd push for yeah. rebates. I'm not a fan of rebates. So yeah, it was just a good conversation. I'm talking a couple of years ago on yeah. the EFTM podcast.
Good call to get him on side too, to get him back on the show.
Oh, look, That's, I think here's the great thing.
Real figure in the industry now.
He's got his finger. Like, not just yeah. on the pulse, it's yeah. like part of the yeah. pulse. And, yeah. You know, I think the industry generally, as he, like, it's a really good point. He's got, like, what do you say, 100 members and 12 yeah. of them are car companies. Yep. It's so much bigger than just car companies.
Exactly right. That's why I wanted to just to clarify yeah, no, that it's not really just car companies and that it's all the yeah. whole pie, the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed that. And hopefully we can talk to Behad again very yeah. soon and just understand more about the industry and where it's going. But two blokes talking electric cars, thanks to NRMA Insurance and Union and Smart Dash Cams. That's enough dancing, Stephen. You're enjoying this far too much. Two blokes talking electric cars thanks to NRMA Insurance and Union and Smart Dash Cams. Touching base with EV owners. And if you're an EV owner, we're easy to get in touch with. You can go to techguide.com.au and yep. Email Stephen. You can come to EFTM.com and email me and we'll Let get together. Know. And when we record, we'll give you a buzz. And we'd love to hear from people who are, you've owned one, got rid of it. You own one, you love it. You yep. own one, you're getting another one. Or you're about to yep. buy one. Doesn't matter.
You got your
matter.
First one, your second, your third one. We
or
want to know.
You're listening to this because you want to buy one.
Yeah.
And you've got questions. Hey. We've got answers, and if Absolutely. We don't have the answers, we'll try and work through them and understand. So another EV owner on the line is Leighton from our local area here. G'day, Leighton. How are you doing, buddy?
Hello. Great to be here. I'm fresh in the world of EV, so happy to have a chat.
All right. So what have you gotten into? We understand, is it a Model 3? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then Model 3 refresh, the Highland, which I guess nice. Is the inside term for it. Yeah, so I picked it up last Monday, so I've had it for wow. just over a week.
So which model, mate? Tell me the specs, tell me what you got.
Yeah, so I got the standard range. I guess as we all do, there's heaps of stuff to read and watch YouTube videos, so I try to do my fair bit of research. I ordered it on release day on September 1
yep.
last year, so I've been waiting for what seems like an eternity, and I just got the standard range version. I got it because of the LFP battery, and to be frank, I don't really believe, as much as I would like to go quicker from time to time, the long range didn't really, I didn't need it, so I think I try to choose sensibly.
So okay. just let me understand here, the LFP battery, that's a new battery technology that's coming in, but BYD use it, but is that something that you did research into going, I want that because it's going to give me better life and less restriction over charging the way you charge the car?
Yeah, well, I think there's enough things to really think about when you have an EV. Last thing I want to think about is also having to charge to 80%. I just like to plug and play and forget and not necessarily have to worry about that, which is why the LFP battery was an appeal to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so and so when you ordered the car, did you or have your wall charger organized? Did you buy the Tesla wall charger? What's your setup?
Yeah, so I don't know if this goes against your opinions or views, but I decided to only go for a granny charger off my 10-amp wall plug. I know that the wall charger maybe eases some range anxiety for people, but when I looked at my daily commute, I didn't figure I needed it. And then I also did some math, some calculations on how much I can actually charge overnight. And because you don't, I mean, just like an ICE car, you don't use your whole tank of gas in a single drive. I also don't have to use my whole battery in a single drive. So even if I don't charge it to 100% over a week period, as long as I can keep ahead of the curve with the granny charger, that was my thinking.
It's kind of like, you know, when we talk to people about advice. Their mobile phone plans, you know. There's no point signing up to a plan like Stephen does with 170 million gigabytes of data when you're only using three or four. But so you've looked at, and this is really good takeaway advice, Leighton, that I love, that you've looked at your daily drive. And I'm assuming it's, you know, 30 or 40 Ks or something, and you've gone, I'm going to get home. I'm going to plug this thing in. I'm the car's parked in my driveway or garage, you know, 9, 10, or whatever hours a day. As long as I plug it in, it's, as you say, staying ahead of the curve is all you need.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Totally. And I worked out that I charge about, I know they try and give you like the 15 kilometers per hour with the granny charger that you charge on the 10 amp. But I mean, I don't really like that figure because the kilometers are subjective to how you drive, right? So I wanted to try and figure out how much percent I charge per hour. Mm-hmm. And I charge about 3% on the granny charger. So as long as you do the math of how long it's going to be in your driver overnight for when I'm getting home, gives you a pretty good idea. And over the weekend, I did a fair few kilometers, and then I just topped up at the fast chargers to get me to the percentage that I needed to get home, and then I did the rest at home.
That's fair, cool.
There's a guy that in the office behind us here who has a Model 3, and I once, you know, we just chatted once when I had the Model Y, and he looked at it and said g'day, and I said, mate, just say no, you can always use the charger out the front if you ever parked all day. It's trickle, but it'll do the job. And then I asked him about supercharging things. He said, mate, I've never charged it anywhere but in the 10 amp socket at home. It's all he needs because he lives local, drives local. It can absolutely be enough for a lot of people.
When I first got my Tesla, I had the Model S back years ago, but I had the wall charger, but my way of thinking was I charge it, it's like I fill up my tank and then it lasts me the whole week.
Yeah.
And so topping up, I'd only ever charge it and plug it in at home if I needed to maybe charge up for a long drive to your office here.
Yeah, smart. So you took a petrol equivalence to your approach, where it sounds to me, Leighton, like you've taken a mobile phone equivalence approach. Yeah. I charge my phone every night. That's how I'm going to charge my car.
Mm. I mean, it helps when I listen to you guys and you do a bit of research. It's just a change of mindset and just viewing it slightly differently than the ICE mindset. And then ask me again in 12 months' time if I still think it's achievable. But at the moment, it's been going awesome.
Can I guess, before I ask you what you like and don't like, can I guess what colour the car is?
I'll have a guess as well.
I guess it's red.
I was going to say red or blue.
Red.
It's unfortunately it's white.
I haven't seen a white Highland on the road.
I have. Yeah, I've seen one. Yeah.
Okay. I think they're stunning. All but right. Unfortunately, 99% of everyone else is a white too.
Didn't
so I mean, you got to
so
compete
that
with
the
that.
White is now the optional color.
Is it a pearl white now? Is it pearl white? Yeah.
I can't tell you exactly what white it is. It's white, but I think they changed in the States. I think the grey is the one that comes out standard now. Not here in Australia.
Okay.
All right. Now, I know you haven't had the car for long, so I need to put your reviewer's hat on. What are you liking so far about the car?
When I went through the stage of researching, I didn't look at anything else other than a Tesla.
Okay.
There isn't anything else that I would look at currently. And I guess it comes into the things that I like. One, the navigation.
Yep.
And how it calculates your charging stops for you.
Yes.
Even though I still look at PlugShare and a better route planner, just the fact that the car does it and how accurate it is, that's awesome.
Agree. That's strong.
Its efficiency is awesome. The range you actually get from the 57 kilowatt usable is awesome. And superchargers, like those things are freaking cool.
You've nailed the three reasons to buy a Tesla, haven't you? I mean, that is legit the three most important things. They've unbelievably been good at battery efficiency. That in-app navigation is outstanding in the car. With the plotting of your percentage, just doesn't happen in any other car the same way. And the charging network we've talked about over the last few weeks. So then here's the thing, though, and this is a tough one because it's so fresh. You're so in love. It's like a new baby. Is there anything that's already just giving you, I wish that was different, or it's just giving you a bit of an irk?
Maybe to go back before I go forwards, one thing that a lot of people say they don't like about it, but I actually do love, so I'm just going to put it in the other character, is I actually enjoy the no stalks. I think the buttons on the steering wheel, I actually really prefer and I like. So I'm going to add that in there. What I don't like, I guess the only real drawback that I'm finding so far is I really wish there was retractable covers in the roof with the massive windows. With the amount of heat that it lets in. You can buy third-party ones, and I've got a third-party one, and it's Like, it's fine, but I just really wish that was part of the car.
A vehicle to be shipped with such sunroof, moonroof style glass and not have a filter of some sort.
Yeah, not even the Model S had that. The Model S had to buy a third-party one for the Model S as well.
You're right. It's a good.
But it's got a sensor. It lets the UV, like, you're fine in terms of UV, but it just uses, like, when you got the cabin air protection with the aircon coming on, or if you don't do it, it gets hot. So just another thing to suck energy out of the battery or thing to think about. So it's not huge, but I just wish that they had maybe provided that.
Have you, what I did with my Model S, I tinted all my windows, including the roof. Have you thought of that to keep it cool?
So there's a bunch of people online, and how much can you trust people online, I guess, but that they say that if you tint your roof, the Tesla roofs crack. So that's not a game that I really want to be playing, because I'm assuming that's expensive. So no, I didn't tint the roof, but I've tinted the sides and just a bit of the back portion.
Well, mate, I'm very excited for you. I love the excitement of a new car every day of the week. Yeah.
How many Ks you put on it? What's the Ks? How many Ks you got on it?
So I've had it for a week. It's been in the shop for tinting and ceramic coating for 2.5 of those days, and we've done 1,100.
Oh, okay. the ceramic coating, good work.
We'll talk to you in 12 months, okay? We want to get the 12-month review, all right?
I'd love to.
I think that's very important. All right, mate, thanks for getting in touch, and enjoy the car, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thanks for your call.
Mate. Cheers, buddy. Yeah, he's loving that Tesla.
Is what's not to love, mate. It's a great car. Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars is proudly supported by Uniden, and they've just released the Uniden Dashview 60 Plus. This is their first 5K resolution dash cam. 5K, even more detail, 150-degree wide-angle front-facing camera as well. It's got the Sony Starvis sensor. That means a lot because it works well during the day, during the night, all types of lighting conditions. That's the whole idea of having a dash cam, so I can record everything that happens on the road, and now in 5K resolution. So check that out, the Dash View range. There are others. There's also the iGo cam range as well. Uniden has got you covered on the road for all your dash cam needs.
Stephen, well, what's in the driveway this week? I've actually had a couple of weeks because you just don't want to cross the bridge too often. So,
I did go a long way for the last car, mate. We'll keep that for a future show.
That's all okay. Good. Sometimes you've got to drive a long way. Yep. So I'm driving the Genesis electrified. They call it electrified, which made me worry. Is it hybrid? Is it plug-in hybrid? But it's a fully electric G80. Now, this is a car that I'm sure we drove last year because it was in, I think it was before you'd got your EQE. It was while we were waiting for the EQE.
Yes.
And we'd actually had EQEs at the same
time.
The sedan.
A sedan,
I think we had EQEs at the same time as we had this because this is a big saloon in old school terms. It's a sedan, it's a big luxury thing. I've got to tell you, I have struggled to get comfortable in this because I think it's, you sit a little bit high when it's actually a bit low. So you've kind of got this feeling that you're really kind of laid back driving it. But look, I'll say straight up, I think my problem with this vehicle is it's like $145,000.
Yeah.
Now, if I had $145,000, I'd buy an EQE.
Thank you.
I'd want a Mercedes badge. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But here's the thing. I think that we sometimes lose because we live in bubbles of our own in whatever style. You know, Genesis Hyundai is a well-regarded Korean car company, right?
So it's kind of the Lexus of Toyota.
Correct.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So in the same way that, and I'm not, and it's not at all a race thing, but it's more just a, you know, your heritage thing. In the same way that a Japanese buyer is way more likely to buy a luxury Lexus than they are a luxury Mercedes. I think the South Korean market is absolutely more likely to buy a Genesis than they are a Mercedes. And so they feel quite proud to own this car.
Yeah.
This is almost faultless as a vehicle. It's beautiful inside. I feel like the generation that we're driving now is probably just one generation old, even USB-A power charging points compared to the G60 SUV that I had last week had USB-C.
Right.
It doesn't have the boost button that I had last week, but it certainly has the punch in sports mode. But it is a beautiful cruise. It's a lovely drive. It's also got, and I don't know whether we've had you in one of these, but I'll make sure it happens. It's got this unbelievable, I've never seen anything other than, oh, it might have been in a Jaguar or something. But anyway, Genesis have this 3D screen. So what it is the info, the dashboard, not the infotainment, the instrument cluster is actually two LCDs, but in front of the light. Yeah. And so you get a sense of depth from the dials and stuff. It is
that's fancy.
A bit mind-numbing to look at, but it's cool and fancy. Yeah. I think it's just those little things. Head-up display, I think it ticks. There's not a box it doesn't tick. So as a luxury car, I'm a massive fan of this. It really is purely a brand choice. Yeah. I genuinely think that you could put this head-to-head against the EQE every day of the week.
In terms of quality and luxury.
In terms of luxury, in terms of features, in terms of safety. This thing, I was at a
safety's
servo
a big thing with Mercedes,
buying peanuts for the studio. Oh. And I went to back out. It would not let me back out because there was a car at the pumps because I obviously was just at the shop.
Yeah.
Car was just edging slowly forward at the pumps, kind of waiting to go out, thinking I was going to go. But because it was edging, he was kind of slowly moving, thinking this guy's going to come out. Yeah. But because he kept moving, the car would not let me move.
Car didn't,
it just legit heavily would not
limited.
Go backwards.
I think my car says heavily speed, heavily limited.
Right.
Just so you don't actually, if you press the accelerator,
so,
you go back.
Yeah, an impressive vehicle. I think
that's good.
My message in the Genesis space is, if you are in the luxury car space, I genuinely think you should go and have a look at a Genesis just to understand the comfort, the luxury. You might actually feel there's a slightly higher level of luxury than you might get in a similarly priced Mercedes, for example. Sometimes in a Mercedes or a BMW, you've got to go up through the kind of price ranks to get certain levels of luxury. So a beautiful car from Genesis that I've been driving the last couple of weeks. What do you drive?
I've been driving the Kia Niro.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is a model that I think is available as both as a hybrid and as well as a full electric. I have the full electric.
Yep.
Range of about 480 kilometers.
Yep.
And it's a good size car. It's an SUV.
Yep.
I think Joe's car. Joe's got a Sportage. It's slightly bigger than that.
Yep.
It's and still has the transmission tunnel in it. Remember when we first got it, thinking, is this an EV or not?
Yeah.
And it was because they've got, like, remember how MG does with the ZS EV,
multiple drive
so that
trains.
they can have the different configurations. And this definitely was an EV, a full EV.
Yep.
So it's I like the room. It was a very spacious car, nice big boot space as well.
Yep.
CarPlay on board again. We're going to talk more about CarPlay in a moment. But it was, I think, a nice-looking car.
Yeah.
Kia's really, I reckon they've nailed the design of their cars. Yeah. They're really eye-catching.
Yeah.
Their designs evolved from their, you can almost tell it's an EV. It's sort of, they've got their own kind of look and feel now for their vehicles.
I've done a good job.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, it's around. You're talking. I think I had the GT line. It's about 78,000.
Yeah,
just under 80K.
And again, that's its only problem is when you compare it to buying a new Sportage. Like if you're going to replace Joe's car, it is a definite leap up to
double,
say let's
it's
go
double
EV.
Almost. Yeah, there's the EV tax, but still a nice car and decent size. So I think if you're like looking for a family car, nice, not a lot of room.
Yeah.
I easily fit in. I'm a tall guy.
I took the previous generation Niro all the way to mum's and back. It's a great car to drive.
Pretty good.
They do good things. Now we're running out of time, but I want to address the message we both got on socials from TARDIS, our mate who supports most of every program we do, and we appreciate that, mate.
What's that, Michael? His name's Michael.
Michael, I did send him, by the way. I sent him all those vouchers that I promised him a couple of weeks ago.
Michael.
So thank you, mate. He wrote this, and this is something that fascinated to me.
Yeah.
And just quickly, really, he said he wants to see a review of Apple CarPlay. But just from your perspective as someone who owns a Tesla for 5 years, was
5 years, yeah.
5 years, which is, you know, unbelievable, big screen everyone knows about.
Yeah.
It's got built-in Spotify. It's got lots of things built in, right? But it doesn't have Apple CarPlay. And for me, that's a deal breaker, right?
Yeah.
So you've now not only driven, you've now owned a car with Apple CarPlay, but you're driving cars every week that are different. And all of them have Apple CarPlay. It's just a matter of whether they have wireless or cabled.
Yes.
Is it something that you see now as being something you couldn't live without? Or do you understand why Tesla does what they do?
I think it's essential. The car, I've only had my car less than a year. It's been like 8 months since I've had my car. And that I'm a newbie to CarPlay, and having and even when I was using Android, I had it on Android Auto, which is very similar. Before that, I had the E200. Before I had the Tesla, which was an older car and didn't have CarPlay built in. It was sort of on that period, you know, when everyone cars were cutting over. And then I got into the Tesla and no CarPlay to be seen. So I'm relatively new. I do love the fact that it really does. It's really safe to use.
Yes.
It does. I know the Tesla was, you're trying to do things in it. You need to look down at your phone sometimes. It's not all on the screen.
Right.
This is all on the screen.
Yeah.
So I think everything, all the essentials, you know, even the most impressive thing is messaging. Like on the Tesla, I could kind of reply and it was hit or miss.
Mate, Siri,
yeah, it just nails it every time. And whether it's messages, talking to you on WhatsApp, it's all there. I love the fact that all my content is there. Like I'm a big audiobooks listener, so Audible is there, podcasts are there, so everything is literally at my fingertips. Way easier to manage all the things you need to do while being safe at it. So yeah, it's amazing. I think it's like power steering. You know, once you've had power steering, you're never going to drive a car without it. The CarPlay, I don't want to drive a car without it.
Can we organise a car that has wind-up windows and no power steering for the two blokes to have a crack at for a week?
Nice.
Wouldn't that be wild?
Nice retro.
No air conditioning, wind-down windows, and no power steering.
Yeah.
Get me a 1985 Ford Laser.
No CarPlay either.
Yeah. Well, we'll put the Laser, you know, head.
Yeah,
head
the little 7-inch Navigator in there.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I agree. It's a deal breaker for me that it's got to be there.
Brilliant.
And we're at the point now in 2024 where if it's not wireless, it's a cross
just,
against it.
Just
as well.
Quickly, there was a car. I think it was the Polestar that had CarPlay but not Android Auto. I had an Android phone at that time.
And the funny thing is, it's an Android operating system.
What's with that?
It's very weird. Yeah. Very weird. All right. Thank you for the question. And if you've got a question, get in touch with us. You can go to EFTM.com, click Ask Trev, go to techguide.com.au, get in touch with Stephen. Happy to hear your questions. Would love to have you on the show. Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars. Thanks to NRMA Insurance and Union and Smart Dashcam. Stephen, see you next week.
See you next time.